What made you want to run for lieutenant governor?
Well, I took on Don Young in 2006 and did a surprising job to sneaking up on him like I did, and with almost 42% of the vote, and decided I had a future in politics. But when I did not win the primary in 2008 for Congress, I thought perhaps the Democrats would feel a little better about my running for lieutenant governor. And plus, that was something I'd had my eye on before anyway, because I thought, looking at the history of lieutenant governors in Alaska, and there really hasn't been a position for that until, I think, 1970. Before that, it was Secretary of State. So it's still being evolving. And that's kind of an exciting place to be when you're evolving positions and people are able to create something out of them on their own and leave their own mark. So that's what, part of what attracted to me. So it's more than just overseeing the Division of Elections, and I feel very passionately about protecting our right to vote, making sure it's secure and that every vote is counted and counted correctly.
It's an interesting job because there are some there's kind of a narrow scope of official duties, but it's also
there's also a lot of
leeway for whoever holds the job to shape their role. So how do you see your role if you were elected lieutenant governor?
Well, we all have our strengths and our passions, and mine centers, I think, strongly, certainly on veterans. And I think there's a lot of room for lieutenant governor to do a fine job in representing veterans' interests, certainly with a state like ours that has a high population of veterans and military. And with my son's involvement in the military, going into the Army after 9/11, and later, you know, in his second tour, being severely injured and going through that journey. A lot of issues along the way became very interesting to me, and I'm concerned about what happens to our veterans in the VA system. We have a good VA system here, so there's a lot of issues around that I get excited about, how we can better make health care for veterans accessible. And in a state like that, like ours, it's a challenge. So there's issues like that.
What's missing from veterans care right now, in your opinion? I mean, you obviously have some experience dealing with the system.
Well, even though we have a beautiful VA clinic that just opened in Anchorage, and I was there for the ribbon cutting ceremony, we lack certain specialties. We also don't have adequate outreach to veterans in outlying regions, and we have them scattered throughout the state. Many a Vietnam veteran can express that and have expressed it very well over the years. We only service, I think, maybe a third, if we're lucky, of all the veterans in the state. So it's getting them in touch with what the process is, how to best fill out those forms to get the assistance that they need and that they've earned. And instead of the costly expense of sending them to Seattle, we don't have certain specialists here. So I would like to see more of that, and certainly working with the university. And I feel very strongly about building a strong university system, one that can really meet the needs of our population.
That might be a good segue into a question I wanted to ask you about education and the economy. It ties all together because you mentioned on your website the need for more training opportunities, more investment in higher education and in skills training and in workforce training.
I have a nephew, for example, who's he's just gone into the laborers union, and so he's getting that apprenticeship experience. And I really believe strongly in on-the-job kind of training and apprenticeship programs. I think it's better for businesses when we do that, and it certainly brings our young people into the workforce better and gets them trained into positions. And why not?
What's the best way to achieve that, do you think, or to flesh out some of those programs?
Well, I don't know. There's so many, I think, opportunities that are being created today. How can the government best do that? I think certainly making it supportive for businesses to have the apprenticeship programs, giving them incentives to do so. Now, as Lieutenant Governor, how much say am I going to have in that? I don't know, but I feel very strongly about the having the opportunities available. And I was a Teamster myself back in the day, and I worked on the pipeline for 3 years, all 3 years of construction, drove concrete mixers in Anchorage for 2 years. And that kind of construction and labor experience, I mean, being in that kind of workforce showed me and demonstrated to me how valuable it is to have that kind of representation and to be able to work with companies and ensure people's rights on the job.
Let me stay on the economy for a second and ask you about, you know, a concern here in Southeast, especially with declining cruise passenger numbers, is tourism.
Mm-hmm.
How can state government, or how could you in your role as Lieutenant Governor, either help to bolster the cruise industry or the tourism industry, or make up for the losses? You know, I don't think we need to look at it necessarily through the framework of just bringing back passengers, although that sounds like that's pretty important. But how do you make sure that the tourism industry, which is so important to a region like Southeast, stays healthy?
Well, it is certainly one of the industries for Alaska, and particularly Southeast, that we want to ensure and maintain. I think what the governor has done with, trying to elicit fear regarding the head tax and reducing that isn't exactly a solution. I make it a point that every time I meet passengers off the cruise ships to ask them, would that make a difference to you? Does it make a difference to you to have that tax reduced? And the answer so far, 100%, has been no. So they think if they're paying a tax that helps Southeast be cleaner or any other thing, they're all for it. And it doesn't make a difference for them. So I don't think those are the kind of incentives that we need to create. Instead, it's a better ferry system would, I think, is very important for Southeast. And that's something that under the past couple administrations, Southeast has been shortchanged. And I know how important the ferry system is to Southeast, and I love the ferry system. As a matter of fact, I'll be on the ferry today with my family, and we enjoy it. And it's also a great way to move around Southeast. I think we can maybe build some extra ports down here as well as, and there's been some discussion about maybe going out to Rodman Bay with the road, since there's already logging roads out there. I would like to hear what the people in Southeast think about these ideas, express their ideas. I've always believed strongly that local communities must have be the voice that we hear over and above anyone else. It shouldn't be the government dictating what should happen, but the people saying this is what we need and the government paying attention to that.
And I hear you saying that
But you are asking about tourism, mm-hmm, as a whole, and the more we know about tourism, I mean, there's several opportunities. I worked in the film industry for a number of years. I ran a talent agency business in the 90s, and the more we can attract films to Alaska, I think the better for us. This is a perfect place to do it. We lost a lot of work in that industry to Canada, but we now have certain development in incentives. So there are incentives we can build in without hurting ourselves. I don't think the solution is to shortchange ourselves in order to attract industry here to Alaska. But we have the scenery. Let's maintain it. I think everybody, especially after what's happened in the Gulf, out of Louisiana and that whole area, which is now looking like so much of it's going to be terribly affected for decades to come, we don't need that here. And so our biggest attraction, you can talk to any tourist, and what's the attraction to coming to Alaska? So we want to ensure that they still want to see it, that there's something to see. and at the same time building some of the other opportunities, ecotourism and all the things around, you know, wildlife experience. And we can do that. I like to build and see small businesses build and diversify our economy, something that's very important for the state instead of putting all our eggs in one basket, which for our state has pretty much been oil and gas.
You mentioned one of your goals on your website is to put Alaskans to work. And it
yes.
sounds like what I hear you saying is that
and that's part of it.
There needs to be a lot of small business development.
And providing the kind of support that they need. And part of that involves the infrastructure that the state can provide. I think the more you have the infrastructure, especially with certain road development that works for those kinds of businesses, the better for us. I see that there's been a reduction in the ships that come to Sitka. For some people, they might like that, but I think for a lot of people, they don't, just because of the impact on their businesses. So we want to find out what are the better ways to get a consistency here for this community, and at the same time, not overwhelm it every time. You know, instead of having 3 to 5 ships in the harbor, which would completely smother the town, you want to have it work in a better way.
A minute ago, you mentioned the BP oil spill. Almost seems like too generous a word at this point. But how will what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico, in your opinion, or will what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico affect Alaska energy policy?
It already has.
How?
It already has, because when this administration, the Obama administration, has limited offshore drilling, that's already an impact. Shell was already prepared to go forth with their efforts. Now that's going to wait probably until next year or till who knows when. I think we have a pretty good relationship in some ways with the oil industry, but one of the things that's happened with past administrations and with the current administration is that they've given them the power and forgotten that we're an owner state. These are our resources as Alaskans, and Alaskans need to benefit from their own resources. And we have, I think, catered and knelt down to some of these companies far too long. There are other options. If we're talking about a pipeline, for example, we can look at different ownership for the pipeline rather than...
For a gas pipeline.
Rather than a coalition of oil companies owning the building the line. So if you're... I think we need to start separating some of that. And that's been discussed by other legislators and by legislators and so forth that have some pretty darn good ideas, I think, for how we can improve that relationship where Alaskans benefit. My bottom line is, how does it work for Alaska and how does it work for Alaskans?
All right. In terms of a gas line, there's a lot of talk about approaches to that, and some of the candidates for governor have very differing ideas.
Yes, they do. and I think there's merits to most of them, really. And that's something we can debate and will be debating. We've been debating for some time. We have existing infrastructure that we can use, and so why not utilize it? We need to improve the haul road to the North Slope. I've driven that thing for 3 years. During the construction, so I know what those rough spots are, but also there's certain deterioration that we need to build up if we're going to work effectively with what we have up on the North Slope.
Mm-hmm. Is, you know, when you look at the different approaches, you know, which do you favor in terms of, you know, either the AGEA process or this All-Alaska gas pipeline or none of the above or a combination of the above? I don't know.
Well, you know, the bottom line is what is going to best work for Alaskans. And what does that mean? That means how are we going to get more money out of it? How are we going to get more jobs out of it? And what has the least impact, environmental impact on the state? And those are the things that we have to use as our filters when we explore these ideas. The gas line out through Canada, I mean, a lot of this is market driven. So it comes down to what can we sell and how can Alaskans get gas? And those are the two challenges that we face right now. How do Alaskans get gas for themselves and that they can afford? And energy is a big issue for us, just and what's affordable for Alaskans and why aren't we doing better than we are? We have some companies here that are operating they're some of the platforms out of the Cook Inlet, and I like to see smaller operations that are, and they've been working very well. Instead of just one of the things I used to say, and I still say, is I don't want to see us being a colony of British Petroleum. We should do better. We shouldn't be treated like a lemonade stand by outside large corporations and have better, we should have much better agreements with them and arrangements. We should have contingency plans, even contingency funds, and that's something I'm individually proposing, especially if we're looking at any kind of offshore drilling possibilities. And that means to ensure that we don't end up with some kind of mess that we're seeing in the Gulf of Mexico right now. On the other hand, let's keep in mind we're neighbors to Canada. Canada is looking at exploration themselves in the Beaufort Sea. So what are we going to do if they're exploring and they have any kind of impact on what's going on? Russia's looking at the Arctic as well. So where do we fit into that scheme, and how are we going to make it work for us and at the same time protect the environment up there?
It sounds like one of the next natural questions for that would be whether, you know, all of that interest in that region means partnerships or competition with, you know, among nations or among different companies. I mean,
well,
and how
in
to
a
exploit
way,
those.
There's a frontier attitude, you know, who's going to stake a claim kind of thing. And so we have to brace ourselves for that reality. And are we prepared for the transportation options up there? How are we building infrastructure in the Arctic? And how are we going to maintain our environment, and so that the bowhead, for example, isn't affected? And I believe that Southeast Alaskans can really appreciate that, because we know we don't want to see, well, like a wastewater plant out here polluting the waters and ending somebody's oyster farm. I mean, that's happened here. We've already experienced what the kinds of impact that pulp mills have had as small sawmill operations were phased out because of these larger operations that happened in the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. So that's why I really like to see. My dad was a logger, and he worked in the small operations. So I have I like to see the smaller operations, and that gives people an opportunity to grow business and I think work with the place that they're in. The larger operations are not so sensitive to a lot of these issues, and that's just the reality of it.
Education is obviously a big state government issue, and yes. And I wonder where you see, in your opinion, how is Alaska's public education system doing?
It could do better, and I don't think No Child Left Behind has been serving Alaska very well. We got kids that are, you know, working towards the test. It's the same with teachers. We don't provide proper incentive for teachers because of our retirement plan has eroded so much that we're not attracting the best. I think we need to attract the best. I really believe in a good public school system. And we have shortchanged rural Alaska too much. We have schools that are closing down because they don't have high enough enrollment numbers. That's a problem. I hear from teachers all the time their concerns about their workload. I think it's a very tough job being a teacher, and it's certainly a labor of love, and many teachers are very good. We need to grow our own here at home, though. We have a lot of teachers that come in from outside that work in rural Alaska, but we need to be hiring Alaskans for a lot of these jobs. And we have, and that's where the university comes in, and how we can work with the university to really build a stronger education programs that and incentives to get to attract the students into education to be teachers. But to do that, we're going to have a better retirement and health care program.
It's interesting how education teachers are, you know, it's a multifaceted profession.
Yeah.
No matter where you work, you know, it's certainly not just lecturing all day. But when you get into rural areas where you are, oftentimes finding yourself, from what I've heard, you know, it's just such a multifaceted, you know, you're a teacher, in some cases, you're a surrogate parent in some communities. Even in a community like Sitka, teachers fill that role in certain circumstances.
Well, you know, I did a few programs, so I worked with at-risk kids in summer programs, And I developed a strong appreciation for what teachers go through. And they're at it 9 months of the year in just in the classroom, let alone all the prep time. And so that is not an easy job. And I don't know, sometimes I think people, the public sometimes doesn't appreciate teachers enough.
One of the things that was interesting on your website under the education heading was a desire to see internet safety training for kids.
Yes. That's one of the things that I've had several briefings on with the police department out of Anchorage and so on. And that's that. These days, we really have to be concerned about that. And it's going to take so much more of an effort. And I think that's where the government comes in. They can help get that going in every community and should be.
Mm-hmm. It's in your opinion, I mean, what's the...
Well, there's a lot of predators online, and I think we're all aware of that. And that's something that has to be addressed, and how to report those things, how to learn. Parents need to learn, and the students also need to learn. And there's, but we also at the same time have to have the broadband, have all the accessibility for communities across the entire state to have online classrooms. And to have those kind of exchanges with other communities within the classroom. So one classroom up in Imana can communicate with a classroom in Michigan, for example. And I think those kind of exchanges are really rewarding as part of that. But we want to ensure the safety of the use of the technology as well. And predators is probably the number one issue.
Hmm. This is a slight change of gears, but the other thing I wanted to ask you about, your platform has a strong stance in terms of family violence and violence against women and making sure that that is curbed in Alaska, you know, and brought to an end. Obviously, a high prevalence in many communities here in Alaska. How would you or what would you like to see done to address the issue?
Well, violence in families and violence in the communities, and especially violence targeted against Native women, it's so high. This Acting Governor Parnell has taken on this challenge, and I commend him for it. But I am concerned about too little too late in some ways, and having a panel that hasn't worked on it at the ground level. I've been involved with various forms of work and effort on this for about 15 years. And I think there needs to be, from the legislature, those who have far more insight into this to address it. I've read their report. I'm not in the plan, and I'm not happy with it. I think it needs to go much further. The state has shortchanged rural Alaska in some of the best ways. There's several issues. There's judicial issues. There's protection and safety issues. There's prevention issues. And for rural Alaska, that involves working with the tribal courts. If you really want to be effective, then work with the tribal courts. Then work with local law enforcement and really support VPSO programs, Village Public Safety Officers. And we can decrease the cost that it takes to do some of this if we work better with the tribes out there in some of what they already have in place. And until that happens, I think we're going to be throwing a lot of money at things. We don't, this administration they're supporting shelters here and there, but the reality is the state doesn't provide that many shelters. You've got one shelter in Barrow, for example, that covers the entire Arctic region. That's a vast region. That doesn't cut it. So you end up with people who are volunteers that are working out of the goodness of their hearts to help people in their communities and aren't getting paid for it. How long can that be sustained?
What you just said about Barrow and one shelter for the entire Arctic region, you think of somebody who's in an isolated village and needs to get to a shelter. They can't just walk down the street.
That's right. You know, the problem isn't just in rural Alaska, it's in the urban communities, and it's everywhere, and it's in every walk of life and every economic environment. It's something that I think is shameful for us, and at the same time, something that we truly can tackle effectively if we are open to all the options. I think part of the time we have these other agendas at play, so we should not politicize this issue. This should not be a political volleyball issue. It should, however, be something that all of us as candidates and all of us, whoever serves in office, addresses and takes on for their own region, for their own communities, and for the entire state, depending on what you're running for.
Your feelings on Governor Parnell's initiatives have, you said, you used the phrase too little, too late, but how does his track record on it compare to other Alaska governors? I mean, is more attention being paid right now than has been before?
Well, yes and no. I look at these people who are talking about this now and wonder, where were you when? You know, where were you 10 years ago? Where were you 15 years ago? Where were you even a couple years ago? What were you doing on these issues? Because people have been crying out on this for a very long time. This is not something that just started. This state has a very bad history with violence and violence against women. I mean, this includes homicide, rape, abuse of every kind. And we need more drug and alcohol treatment programs. You can't say you want to end violence against women and then cut these programs or cut funding for these programs. And yet that's happening. We can't say we want to protect women and children, but we really don't have enough shelters throughout the entire state or enough education, or we limit the kind of education that's going to be allowed in the schools around this kind of subject. We need to work better with the community councils of every city and have a zero tolerance kind of attitude towards violence against women and children.
Is it solvable, or is it something that's mitigated as best as possible?
Well, I like to think it's solvable. I want to think optimistically. At the same time, we have a lot of work. We have a lot of work to do. This community, Sitka, has this problem. They're one of any community anywhere. And how is it being handled here? You know, you have one shelter. How effective is the police department working with that? How are the local programs working on this issue? So you've got the efforts on the ground level. All the communities, I think, are asking the state government for certain kinds of support. Is the government listening? And I think part of the time, yes, and part of the time, no.
One more question before we let you go, and thanks again for your time. The lieutenant governor candidates right now are traveling the state and discussing the things that they would like to do. How much of what a lieutenant governor is actually able to accomplish depends on the governor they serve under? And how would you, you know, deal with that situation if the governor that you served with wasn't completely supportive of your own ideas?
Well, I think that's where the art of persuasion kicks in, working with the governor. And I think we have three fine gubernatorial candidates on the Democratic ticket, you know, with Hollis French, Bob Ho, and Ethan Berkowitz. And I am I've already been working on those relationships with those three and preparing myself to work with them once I am elected lieutenant governor. I think they're quite open to a lot of my ideas as it is. And many of these things I've discussed over the years. I've never made it a secret that I care about protecting the country that we live in and making sure that we don't pull up three-eyed fish and that kind of thing, that we really take care of the environment that we're in. And at the same time, I'm not anti-development. It's just being responsible in our development. And I think all three of them are very much of the same mindset as well. It's looking at alternative and renewable energy so that we're creating, you know, more self-sustaining communities. And why not? Better housing ideas. You know, let's be innovative. Let's take advantage of Alaskans' ingenuity because it's there. Some of these operations, you know, there's ideas always kicked around. Whether it's in agriculture or fisheries, value-added industries, whether it's with timber waste or fish waste, cat food. I mean, this is a perfect place. We even have a lot of cats.
All right. I want to ask you a lighter question related to your experience driving up to the North Slope and back. when you see shows like Ice Road Truckers and,
right.
and you know.
Which I have.
What do you think? What's going through your mind while you're watching those?
Sometimes I chuckle when I watch them. I like the one woman on there. I think that's great that she's on there because you don't really see a lot of women driving trucks even today, which is remarkable to me. But some of those things, you know, what it does is it brings me back to, oh, yeah, I remember when I had to throw on the Jake brake and grab, you know, the trailer brakes at the same time. And people say, you shouldn't do that. And I'm crossing black ice. But I already know that it's going to grab. And then I accelerate. And when I accelerate, I can drag the trailer across because the only reason why you do that is because you're going too fast, which would happen with me sometimes. There was a time when my trailer jackknifed on ice up in Chandelier area. And that was pretty scary, you know, because I was driving in places where rigs would go over the edge sometimes, and that'd be the end of the rig, and sometimes of the driver. And those things did happen. So I had a great respect for what I was up against. I have a great respect for those folks who are ice road truckers. I think a lot of that stuff, of course, gets sensationalized. But on the other hand, the danger is real. Yeah. The danger is very real, and I know it firsthand and up close and personal. And you don't drive that much for that many and put on that many miles like I have. I've logged miles from one end, from Valdez to the Prudhoe Bay gates. And I know that road pretty darn well, at least from those old days, and how rough that can be. So my hat's off to anybody who does that. But I'll tell you, I went commercial fishing out of gill netting one summer for some kind of break from truck driving, I guess. And that was the hardest work I ever did, and that was out of Bristol Bay. Mm. And I decided to go back to truck driving.
Wow.
So, and I drove low boys. So I hauled equipment. I hauled vertical support members to the pipeline. I hauled the insulation units and heating units and all kinds of stuff that went to the line, as well as equipment, even shacks, building sections, a crane weight that actually broke the fifth wheel on one of my rigs.
I just wonder if you're watching the shows and predicting what's going to happen because you have so much experience. You're like, oh, she's going to spin out because I've been there before. And,
yeah. People often ask me about driving, you know, about backing those rigs up and how difficult that is. And the guys up on the jobs, they used to put me to the test. And so I was very proud when I would pass those tests.
Diane, thanks for your time.
Thank you.